Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
Okay.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Welcome to Speak for Yourself from the Crib, presented by Hyundai. Marcellus Wiley here. Coming up, we'll tell you if Colin Kaepernick and NFL are going to reunite this year. And also if Tom Brady has a real shot to win the MVP. But right now, I'm joined by LeVar Arrington and Mark Schler. What's up, stink dog? Today, we're going to start off in Seattle. My dog, where Pete Carroll just addressed his decision not to sign Colin Kaepernick back in 2017. Carroll met with Cap right after he and the 49ers parted ways. And now the coach says he wishes he had given the quarterback a chance.
I regret that that didn't happen in some fashion. I wish we would have contributed to it because the guy deserved to play. I thought at the time, it just in our situation as a backup, man, I didn't feel it was right to, at that time. So I had to make that football decision. It was about our team and the situation. We had our starting quarterback and all of that. And it wasn't going to be the open competitive situation that I'd like to think all of our spots are, because Russ was such a dominant figure and all that. So when you look back, I felt like we missed the opportunity. And so as I look back at it, I wish we could have figured it out and known what we know now and given him the chance, because I would love to see him play football those years.
Mark, are you buying Pete Carroll here?
I am buying Pete Carroll. I mean, I think one thing about the Seattle Seahawks is it is a situation. When you go to their practice, it is open, it is competitive, it is one of those things. I think that he really believes that, you know, he thought Colin Kaepernick deserved an opportunity. He wasn't going to get an opportunity to be a starter, obviously, because of Russell Wilson, how great Russell Wilson is. I think that's a large part of it. So I do buy that part of it. I think there's more to it than that, though. I mean, I don't think that's the whole story. Obviously, when you bring Colin Kaepernick in that situation, I mean, that's a guy that has been a starter. There's a lot of questions. You open your starting quarterback up to those questions. You open him up to press conferences. You open your team up to having to answer questions. And, you know, continuity and not having those things in your locker room or not having to have your players address those things, I think, is a big part of managing your football team. So I don't think that's the only reason that he wasn't going to get to compete for a starting job. I don't think that was the only reason. But I do believe that Pete Carroll is sincere when he said, I don't want to bring him into that situation, because I do feel at that point, that was years ago, that he was still a starting quality quarterback.
Looks like we lost LeVar Arrington once he comes back.
I blew him away. He wasn't ready for that. I said, I blew him away.
Let's you hit him with that one two-piece. Let's talk about this. I got to be real about this. This story is impossible to buy on its surface. It's just not plausible. Like, if you follow all of the comments, it just actually tangles you up in a spider web of issues. I'll take you back to something my grandmother used to always tell me. She used to say that the truth is simple and lies are complex. There's a reason why this story is pretty complex. It's because something is not being told here. So there's always been this fascination for me for Pete Carroll and his mantra of always competing. And I love the guy, and he has so much emotional latitude, and he gives his guys the freedom to be who they are. But let's not forget, as glowing as I am about Pete Carroll, there's a good Pete Carroll and there's not so good Pete Carroll. The good Pete Carroll may be right now holding a grenade, actually not trying to say exactly the truth in this situation. Maybe they did offer Colin Kaepernick a backup situation and he turned it down. whatever it is, there's something that he's holding that he's not letting go and disclosing. Now, the not so good Pete Carroll is the same guy who left all those youngsters and kids on the hook when USC was going down in flames and took $35 million and took a flight to Seattle and became the head coach, let that program go down. So in that situation, you look at this through those lenses and start to analyze what Pete Carroll is saying, you start to realize that, hold on, Pete, you had Russell Wilson and you bring in Colin Kaepernick, and after a great meeting with Colin Kaepernick, you come to the realization that he's a starter in this league. How is he not a starter in this league? If he's on your roster, he's a backup on your team. So why bring someone in who's a starter unless you're thinking of them as a backup? A couple years ago, Pete Carroll comes out and says this. You know what? It got blown out of proportion, Colin Kaepernick, Kip Kaepernick and us discussing the protests. He said it got blown out of proportion. Yesterday, he said it wasn't true. That was never discussed. Which one is it? When you look at it from a pure football perspective, you're looking at a roster where they're going to run it back with Geno Smith as their backup. And what, Austin Davis and undrafted guys back in the days who are now coaches? Like, they need to upgrade their roster at the backup position. And I think they brought Kaepernick in for that. But somehow, some way, they got to a place where they didn't want that to happen anymore. I wish Pete Carroll would just admit that, and then we can move forward.
I think that's some valid explanations right there, Marcellus, to be honest. It makes me think about it. I am buying the story, and the reason why I'm buying it is based upon the fact that he didn't have to respond to begin with. I will say this, and in all sincerity, I believe Pete Carroll is using this as an opportunity to clear his own name as it applies to the 2020 hindsight of how Kaepernick was treated. And maybe this is that moment for him to be able to say, let me straighten up the story as it applied to me, as it applied to our team and organization. But he didn't have to say anything at all. And looking at it from just a face value, if he wasn't going to be sincere or genuine to a certain degree, whether some of the things you're saying are correct, whether some of the quotes that he made may not actually match up, he did not have to engage the conversation. Pete is well established enough, well respected enough, and smart enough to know that the minute he spoke on this Kaepernick situation, the climate that we're currently sitting in right now, it was going to become a headline. It's going to be on Speak for Yourself Today and numerous other TV shows where they're going to dissect and really break down what it is that Pete Carroll may have been saying or may not have been saying. So I think by him knowing that and being clear on that, there is a level of genuineness and sincerity in the words that he's saying. But I agree. I think the rabbit hole definitely goes a little deeper, and I think there's probably other agendas or reasons for him doing it. But the one that I settled on was I just want to separate myself from any ill feelings in terms of how this man was treated based upon a change of feelings that people had 3 years later.
Yeah, I would say this. I mean, how many different organizations did Colin Kaepernick even get to go in and work out for? Pete Carroll is one of those organizations. And, you know, most of the time, even when we're answering questions as former players and we're answering questions, we answer the question the way we want to answer the question. Not necessarily what the reporter is digging for, but the way you want to shape the narrative, right? And you're very versed in that as a head coach or as a player, based upon the narrative that you want to be out there. And I think there's always more to the story. You know, when it's come to a head coach, there's a lot of decisions and a lot of things that you have to think about when you're managing your football team. And I think that's what Pete Carroll said is, hey, listen, man, we brought him in. We're one of the teams, one of the few teams that brought him in. We worked him out. We really liked him. But there wasn't a spot because we looked at him as like, hey, we don't want you to compete with our starting quarterback. Our starting quarterback is established. He doesn't miss games. Whatever the case may be, and ultimately we'll give you an opportunity to go out there and find your starting job or at least give you a chance to compete for your starting job. The other thing is, there is noise. There are things that people are going to have to answer and talk about, and I don't want to bring that into my organization. And that's a, that is perfectly acceptable. Like, when you're managing a football team, it's like the Tim Tebow scenario. Like, there's a lot of teams that didn't want to bring Tim Tebow in. I think Tim Tebow is a good football player. I don't think he's a quarterback, but I think he's a good football player. But there are a lot of teams that say, I don't want to have, you know, a press conference for my backup quarterback. That's a distraction. And you know as well as I do, teams really worry about the distraction during the course of the season, and that's part of the decision-making process that goes into being an organization, a head coach, you know, in a football team. So I don't fault Pete Carroll. I look at Pete Carroll, and I have a lot of respect for him.
I got a ton of respect for Pete Carroll, but I never had Seattle as the intended target in terms of all of the shrapnel and all of the consequences that have come from Kaepernick being unemployed and blackballed. I thought Seattle actually was one of the teams that really put forth effort until I heard them yesterday. And then I was like, wait a minute. You have now talked yourself into the crossfire. And the cover-up sounds worse than the crime. Like, if we're starting to really untangle what Pete Carroll is saying, he's basically saying, I love the guy. He's a starter. And we had Russell Wilson, so we brought him in. If you brought him in and you already got a starter, what'd you bring him in for? A backup. Okay, where's the offer? If you can get Colin Kaepernick to even bite at any offer, you've done something there, because who doesn't want to stack the deck in terms of backups, in terms of talent on the roster? But no, we'd rather go forward with Geno Smith. What? What are you saying right here? So that makes no sense in a football perspective. And I'm with Pete Carroll. Look, I'm going to keep it 100. Pete Carroll's a white coach, and we're asking him right now in this moment how he felt about Colin Kaepernick back then and right now. Like many a person, they have a change in tune. And that's okay. It's fine. But you have to either know how to dance with this conversation with sophistication or stay out of this conversation, because people will pick up on your issues, the discrepancies, and they're all glaring right now. Since 2018, 18 quarterbacks by the names of like C.J. Beathard and Ryan Finley, Will Greer, all of them have went out there and started a combined 71 games. You know how many of those games they won? 7. You try to tell me that this is not just league-wide, but Seattle didn't think that maybe we put ourselves in a position where one day, if Russell Wilson ever gets hurt, which he never does, we need someone a little more capable in the backup position. I really think he did himself a disservice by stepping in this and not being genuine. That's where I am with Pete Carroll. No love lost. Just keep it 100. Coming up, the NFL is committing big money to social justice causes, but will Colin Kaepernick be a part of their plans? Find out next. Speak for Yourself is presented by Hyundai. Welcome back to Speak for Yourself from the Crib, presented by Hyundai. Marcellus Wiley here, joined once again by LeVar Arrington and Mark Schlereth. Let's move to the NFL, which is putting its money where its mouth is when it comes to supporting the players and their fight for social justice. The league just committed $250 million over 10 years to help combat systemic racism, and reportedly would even be interested in working with Colin Kaepernick on social justice initiatives. Mark, what's your reaction to this?
I think it's, I really do think it's awesome. I mean, I think that part of the issue in the NFL is oftentimes the NFL, to me, has allowed people that hate the NFL to set the narrative of the NFL. And this seems so much more proactive than it's been in the past, which is more of a reactive situation. So to me, they're proactive. They're saying, hey, we want a partnership with our players. This is not just money to say, hey, go away and, you know, and everything is okay. This is let's create a situation where we're actively working together, actively working to eradicate some of these issues. And you talked about Pete Carroll and, you know, and changing his tune to some degree or whatever. And I think all of us that grow up in a locker room or even in the television industry, all of us have we've been insulated to some of the issues, because in a locker room, you start to look at your differences and you start to look at, you know, your teammates, and you start to realize that, hey, what binds us together, the things that make us alike are far greater than the things that make us different. And you become somewhat insulated to the problems of the real world. You know, my focus is so myopic on my teammates and winning football games and studying and preparing and all that stuff that I think that sometimes we didn't take the time, or at least I know I haven't taken the time, to truly listen. I'm just a guy that wants to love people and care about people and to really sit back and listen to the situations and understand what some of my teammates went through that maybe I wasn't aware of, or I didn't make myself, involve myself in. I think it has all been very sobering for us. So I look at this as the league's way of saying, hey, man, we're listening. We have been enlightened. It's a sobering moment, and we want a partnership with our players to make this league a better place and to make this world a better place. And I commend the NFL for doing that.
I agree with you, Stink. And I'll add this to the conversation. This whole millennial talk that I continue to kind of lean on as I give my perspectives, right? The millennial age now, guys like Patrick Mahomes and Saquon Barkley, Mahomes is right on the cusp. He was born in 95, so he might as well be a millennial, even though he's not, all right? But here's the thing. When you look at all of these young, beautiful, amazing, phenomenal football talents, and you're able to see a person with a message that we're looking at with this video right now, this B-roll, right? You are now able to put a face that you recognize, that you cheer for, that you believe in, that you put all beliefs and different things aside, differences, all kinds, because I believe in these faces that are talking about Black Lives Matter now. So the power that created, for me, my initial reaction was like, man, listen, the National Football League has made a point of being able to ride the waves that are created, whether it was the Me Too, that No More campaign, when domestic violence was showing its ugly face at a high rate, or Heads Up Football, when concussions, the epidemic of CTE and all of those issues came about, and how do we respond to it? This is another one of those moments in time where you're looking at a big, big wave, and the NFL is not going to be on their surfboard trying to swim through that big wave when they can score a whole bunch of points jumping up on that surfboard and riding it out, right? So social media has made it very, very much, you cannot avoid this. You can't avoid it, Marcellus. And for that, you might as well jump on your surfboard and try to ride this wave and that half pipe the best way that you can and score as many points as you can while doing so.
Hey, I respect you guys. I respect both of you guys for taking that blue pill this morning, but I'm going to take the red pill, and you know what's coming. I love the NFL. Like, look, I wouldn't be here in this situation without the NFL. And I've had tremendous relationships and partnerships with the NFL. Nothing to this magnitude. So salute NFL, and I applaud you. It went from $90 million in the Players Coalition to $250 million right now over 10 years. And I always knew, and I used to say this, and I met a little backlash back in 2016 when I was saying that this is going to end in resources. This is going to end with a check. This is going to go from a situation where you're from kneeling to dealing, and you're going to have to affect all. And it looks like the NFL is in effort of doing that. But let me be real about this as well, because there is a flip side to this. There's an old saying that war can't be avoided, just postponed. And if you think about what's happening here, the real issue, why this hasn't quieted all of the Colin Kaepernick supporters, is why would Colin Kaepernick want to sign on to your initiatives when you won't let him sign on to play in your league? Remember, Roger Goodell did not mention Colin Kaepernick by name. And now in this report, he is mentioned by name. But is he mentioned by name just for cover? Like, oh, we really didn't take care of this when we should have. We know we made a mistake. We're going to pay the guilt tax, so we're going to up the ante from 90 to 250 million, but still not address the core issue. Why this is still a tug of war. You can't avoid it. You're just postponing it.
Well, here's where I would argue with that point with you, Marcellus, is that the one difference is the league has come out and actually said, we were wrong. When have you ever heard the National Football League say, we were wrong? Now, not only are we admitting guilt, but now we are putting our resources where our mouth are, you know, our money where our mouth is, and we're saying we were wrong. We want a partnership with our players. We want to rectify and help attack systemic racism because it does absolutely, you know, it does live in our society right now. We have seen it. We have witnessed it firsthand. We have seen the videos, and they're appalling. So we are partnershiping with our players. I felt like, for me, this is the first time that I have actually seen a partnership. Like, I always looked at what Adam Silver has done as the commissioner of the NBA and the NBA players, and I've always felt like that was so much more a partnership than the NFL has ever been. And this is the first time where I've ever seen the NFL say, hey, I'll raise my hand. We were wrong, and we're going to support you guys, not only financially, but with our words and with our actions. And that's what's beautiful to me about this moment in time. We're actually seeing change. We'll see how much change there is, but we're actually seeing the first steps. At least we're seeing the NFL step toward the players and saying, man, hey, listen, we're sorry. We were wrong. And that's a big step.
Huge.
I think there's two things that we have to be careful on in this conversation. One is making it as a, this is a result of missing and making a mistake with Colin Kaepernick. I think that that's moving the goalposts a bit, because I think the reality here is that this is coming from pressure from your biggest faces of the game. I don't think we can lose track of those are the faces of faces. There are a few missing, but those are some tremendous stalwarts for your league in that video, asking for help and asking for support and saying we matter and this matters. These messages matter. When you see that type of organization and that execution on such a high level taking place, there's more to come. So you got to pay attention to that if you are the platform in which these young men are building and growing their brands. That's for one. Then secondly, you can't connect the NFL to the teams in these situations. Maybe let me put y'all up on game real quick. Maybe y'all don't understand. The National Football League in itself is a nonprofit, all right? While the others, while each one of the teams are a for-profit business, all right? So they act on their own. They come together and issues are discussed and done as a group that comes through the NFL. But the NFL itself is geared to do these particular things. Put money back into the community. Put money into charitable situations. Put money into foundations and trusts. And when guys are out here trying to do certain things in the community that have played the game, they have money for that. That is the function of the National Football League. So to paint them in a picture as though they're trying to do this based upon the guilt of what they did with Colin Kaepernick, I would say is misrepresentative of what the NFL is trying to do here. I don't really care what the reason why they are putting so many resources behind it. I just hope and believe that these young men that are leveraging their voices and using them to such a maximum capacity on social media continue to mold and shape how that money is used in the partnership. Because to throw money at it is to throw a number at it, and it's a monetary deal. But when there are emotions and commitment that are connected to that, then that's when you'll start to see execution and you'll start to see real action take place. And that's what I'm hoping to see. And that's what I feel will take place as long as these young men continue to stay as a united front and come with a very clear and concise message as to what this means to them.
It's interesting. I hear you, LeVar, and I'm with you. So much of me is with you. However, without asking the why, those ill motives can still exists. Those ill motives could still lie and slumber underneath the surface. And who knows when they'll show their ugly head again. But I'm going to accept the $250 million, and I'm going to apply it as a resource to help this issue. That said, there's some parallels between this situation and what we were just talking about with Pete Carroll. Actions speak louder than words, Pete Carroll. You had Colin Kaepernick in the building in 2017. Didn't sign him for whatever reason. 2018, you scheduled him to come in. Someone from the organization asked, is he going to protest? You reschedule and postpone the meeting. That has never occurred again. And then, in this moment right now, Pete Carroll can still clean it all up, because actions speak louder than words, and sign him right now. And it will be an upgrade over their backup situation, but he's not. Now, the NFL in this situation is funny because money can't solve all ills. Like, you just can't throw money at the problem and say it's solved. Like, look at our country right now. Since the 1960s, they've thrown over $5 trillion to welfare reform. And there are a lot of metrics out there that show that this country has not gotten better with that money. It's actually gotten worse. So the money is not the only medicine. There's a difference between principle with an AL and principle with an LE. And I love the principle right now that's coming out with the AL. Oh, give it to them. But the LE is interesting right now, because if it's just guilt tax, I get it. But there is going to be a loud, growing number of people who are going to say, please, let's address exactly what the issue is that started this in the first place, instead of dancing around that issue, which unfortunately, which is crazy to say, when you give someone $250 million, you think the issue is done. It's still unresolved, especially if you're coming from Kaepernick's camp. Coming up, a lot of guys are out there wondering what's going to happen with baseball this season. I know I have a few questions, and our guy Tom Verducci will answer them all. Next, Speak for Yourself is presented by Hyundai. Welcome back to Speak for Yourself from the Crib, presented by Hyundai. Marcellus Wiley here. And I'm joined now by Fox MLB analyst Tom Verducci. So, Tom, let's get right to a lot of meat here on this bone. What is holding up a deal between the owners and the players?
Well, there's two reasons here. Number one is that the players say, we're only going to take 100% of our salaries on a prorated basis. No cuts beyond that. And then you get the owners saying, we can only have the season end on September 27th. We don't want to be playing the World Series in November and even December. It has to end before November 1st. So that kind of constricts where they can go with the number of games played. But I'll tell you right now, one key here, you heard the commissioner Rob Manfred say this week, we are definitely going to have baseball this year. And the reason he could say that, Marcellus, is the players agreed back in March that absent an agreement between the two sides, the commissioner has the right to schedule whatever is left of a season. And that would probably be about 48 to 50 games that the owners would say, we're going to play 48 to 50 games and then our postseason, have it done on September 27th in the regular season, World Series by November 1st. And the players have already signed on to that. So that's the default position. So in the meantime, the question is, can they work out an agreement to get more games than those 48 to 50 games? To do that, the players would probably have to get off their position of having 100% of their salaries on a prorated basis. So if I can, Marcellus, now, I want to play a game with you. Can I play a game with you here?
Yeah.
You remember please, let's make it. A deal, right? Let's make a deal.
Mm-hmm.
We already know that 50-game season, the players could get 31% of their total salaries that they get in a full season, right? Now, if they want to sign on a deal now and take a 70-game season at 85%, say, kind of the owner's latest proposal, that's about 36% of their total money. $240 million is the difference. So if you're a player, knowing the owners already have that default position, 50 games, do you kind of say, all right, we're going to get off our position of not taking a second pay cut because that's worth $240 million to us? Or do you stick to principle and say, we're just not going to agree with this, and if it has to be 50 games, it's 50 games?
Mm. Now, I understand that default position because they already signed on back in March, but they also still have the leverage of saying, hey, we just won't play. I don't know how they can't go out there and execute it, but do you think the players will actually sit out this season if their requests aren't met?
Yeah, I don't see that happening because there is that agreement on paper in March where they gave the commissioner this right. If we can't agree, you go ahead and schedule a season according to the best efforts that you can make. That's the term that's in there. That's kind of nebulous, right? It doesn't say the minimum number of games, a maximum number of games. So if they don't want to play, they're actually going against an agreement they signed in March. That would be a strike. So I don't see that situation. Now, you may have some players who decide for health reasons they might not come back and play, but I don't see the players in mass saying, nah, we don't like this, and we're going to stay home.
Now, this landscape was wide open for them. Like, there was no live sports for so long. I mean, all you had to compete against was, like, versus on Instagram Live if you're into rap like that. But it seems like baseball dropped the ball. Do you agree?
Yeah, no, I agree. And listen, every day that goes by now, they're missing an opportunity. They're literally missing games, if you believe the owners, that they can't push the postseason into November. But you're absolutely right. Ideal scenario would have been 4th of July weekend. You're in your backyard grilling up the dogs, and you're listening to a game on the tube or the radio, right? That's what baseball is in the summer. It's kind of the sound of summer. And as you mentioned, they have kind of or could have had the landscape to themselves to get out there sort of first. And especially baseball, you know, they play every day. The episodic nature of the game, some people may find that boring, but it's actually kind of a reliable thing to a lot of people. It's not an event sport. The fact that it would be around every day when we're looking for normalcy would be a powerful thing. That opportunity, at least as far as the 4th of July goes, is gone. I think best case scenario now, you're talking about getting players into camp probably the second week in July and starting a season end of July, first week in August.
Now, is baseball aware and do they care of the potential damage they're doing to their fans?
Oh, they care. I think in their minds they had this idea, too, about July 4th. They would have started with the Yankees against the Red Sox, the Dodgers against the Giants, the Cubs and the Cardinals, all the big rivalries coming right out of the gate with a lot of momentum. So, yeah, I think they realize it wasn't for lack of trying, but they haven't been really close enough to think that there was an opportunity to close the deal in time to play on July 4th. So, yes, and of course, the other worry they have underneath this is that the collective bargaining agreement expires after next year. So if you can't agree on a one-year fix to a pandemic season, boy, the odds of getting together on the next CBA is not looking too good because you got two sides right now that just don't trust each other.
Well, thank you, Tom. Hopefully on 4th of July, I'll be grilling and chilling, and it's time for some baseball. We'll see, man. We'll talk to you soon, Tom. Thank you.
You got it, man. Thank you.
And coming up, one of Tom Brady's former teammates says Brady is going to win MVP this year. We'll tell you what we think next. Speak for yourself. Presented by... Welcome back to Speak for Yourself. Marcellus Wiley here. Back with LeVar Arrington and Mark Schlereth. Let's talk some Tom Brady. Was just spotted working out with Gronk and some of his other teammates down in Tampa. But one of Brady's old teammates says the Patriots are actually better off without him. Woo, whoa, shots. Former New England tight end Christian Fourier says Brady was holding his old team back because he couldn't adapt in his old age. But he also added that he thinks Brady will win MVP now that he's down in Tampa. Stink! Do you think Brady's a real MVP threat?
Oh, I do. I do. One, just simply because of the weapons surrounded by the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. I mean, when you look at their team in totality, one, they've got arguably the two best receivers in football as a tandem. When you talk about Chris Godwin, you talk about Mike Evans. They're incredible. Three tight ends that can flat out play in Cameron Brate. And, you know, obviously they have Gronk there. And I can't remember the kid from Alabama as well. His name escapes me right now. But they've got unbelievable talent in Tampa Bay. The other thing that people don't really realize, you go about the last 6-7 weeks of the season last year, that defense under Todd Bowles, their defense coordinator, you're talking about young first, second, you know, third year players, aggressive blitzing style under Todd Bowles. They were one of the top defenses in football the last 6-7 weeks, and they're young. So it was a matter of finding their feet underneath them, creating turnovers. I mean, think about this. Tom Brady, I think, threw 8 interceptions last year. Jameis Winston had 39 total turnovers last year. They were a 7-9 team. You don't think, you know, you don't think 22 less interceptions is going to lead to another 4 or 5 wins? I do. I think so. So, I mean, they're an 11, they're an 11-5, you know, 12-4 type football team in a tough division. Yeah, he's definitely going to have an opportunity to win an MVP.
You were talking about O.J. Howard out of USC.
Thank you,
Mr. Stank. And yeah. I totally agree with you on this point. Listen, I was in D.C. when Michael Jordan came to D.C., all right? And one of the things that we always wanted to see is if he could still be that player he was when he was in Chicago. So whether he's a legitimate, you know, pick or not, or thought to be an MVP, because you will only take so many guys that you can say belong on a list that I don't care where they play, I'm still going to be captivated and intrigued as to what they can accomplish where they're at. And so I went to most of those games. I had courtside seats to go see the Wizards play and was always there watching to see what MJ was doing. And I think the same, well, I was back then. But anyways, you know, when you look at where Tom Brady is right now in his career, and as Stink said so well, you got all this talent. He may have more talent at the receiver's position than he's ever had during the entire course of his career. And one thing's for certain, they showed that video of him working out with Gronkowski. I know Tom, and I've seen his work habits. He works out here, and he works at certain places out here. Now, he might not be doing that this year, but I can guarantee you he is throwing pass, upon route, upon studying the film, upon what it is that the scheme is going to be with Godwin, with Evans, with Gronk, and whoever else he's going to be throwing that ball to. They are working right now. You best believe that. And those attention to details are going to be the separator for him in this campaign coming up. I don't think they sign him if they don't feel as though he can have that level, that type of a season. I think you just got to pay attention to where the money goes, and the money brought him in, not somebody else, to be what they wanted him to be in Tampa Bay.
Yeah, he's absolutely going to be an MVP candidate. You have to remember who Tom Brady is in terms of what weapons he's had around him in his career. And there's only one time where he even had a weapon that was on par with this. And now, in this situation, he has the most dynamic duo and the greatest core, it seems like, outside of Kansas City. Let's talk about what they have in Tampa Bay. When you talk about the receivers and Evans and Godwin, you know how prolific they are. They have a running game. They have what they need. Let's go back to some less memorable times for Tom Brady, 2006. Y'all remember 2006? That was my last year in the league. And I remember Tom Brady going out there throwing 24 touchdowns, 12 interceptions, and 3,500 yards. The next year, Randy Moss showed up. He threw 50 touchdowns and only 8 interceptions and 4,800 yards and only lost one game in the Super Bowl to the New York Giants. And that's when you gave him one next-level weapon. He has more than one now. So if you look at this situation, it's just ripe for Tom Brady to go out there and do it. And then you have a coach who is going to dare you to close your eyes maybe 2 or 3 times a game and just throw that 50-50 ball, let them big dudes go get it, and they will come down with those opportunities. Bruce Arians, in his first year, number one passing offense, third in total offense, tied for third in scoring, and you add Tom Brady to that mix, it's going to be special, y'all. Let's talk about another quarterback who hopes he's special this year. Hopefully he can have an MVP-like season. That's Baker Mayfield. Cleveland is looking to bounce back after last year's disaster. And according to a new ranking from Bleacher Report, Baker has the second best supporting cast of any quarterback in the league, behind only Super Bowl champ Patrick Mahomes. Mark, is this a make or break season for Baker?
No, not for Baker. I mean, think about the Cleveland Browns in general. I mean, this will be his third different coach in 3 years, his third different coordinator in 3 years. I mean, you've got to have some continuity for a young quarterback. Yeah, they've got a lot of weapons, but, you know, ultimately you've got to have continuity before you start judging what kind of player you have. And So give him 2 years within this offense before you decide whether Baker can play at the NFL level or is going to be a great NFL level player. He's already proven he can play. You know, to develop what kind of quarterback he actually can be, he's got to have some continuity from a system standpoint. And so it takes 2 years in my mind for him to have that.
I totally agree. I do not see this as a make or break year for the very simple facts and reasons that you just gave, Stink. Listen, I went through that in Washington, D.C. My first year, two head coaches. By my third year, I had gone through Coach Trubisky, Coach Turner, Coach Schottenheimer, and now was on to Coach Spurrier. I do not put that type of evil on anybody who has an opportunity to play in the National Football League, let alone at the quarterback's position. So, yeah, I think that this is one of those things. Give him an opportunity to have some stability before we start talking about his talents not being good enough to you know, place him in a make-or-break type of scenario.
I disagree with you guys. Yes, he will have opportunities going forward, even if he fails this year. But in terms of how he's regarded, oh, it's make or break. I've been there before as well, LeVar. When you're coming down that mountain, you can't be in a situation where in the offseason, your owner, your general manager has that closed door meeting with you and they say, don't do that again. And you know what that is, what you put up last year. They addressed the offensive line. You talk about the weapons and Odell Beckham playing through a sports hernia last year. This year, he's going to be healthy. You talk about the additions. They have everything they need. And they're going to look at Baker Mayfield and say, no excuses. New head coach. You had a bad O-line last year. You had a bad coach last year. You had injuries to your best receiver. That's out the window. So taking it to my own story, when I was out there playing well, and I had 10 sacks, 13 sacks, then I had six. And I had that closed door meeting. Now, I wasn't the quarterback, but they looked at me like, don't do that again. And if you do that again, there are going to be consequences for that. You can't have consecutive bad seasons and still be regarded mentally as a franchise quarterback. So if I look at this roster and I realize there are really no issues and holes around it, all fingers will point at Baker Mayfield. That's why we have the attitude change. That's why we have the change in technique and form with Alex Van Pelt switching his shotgun formation foot. Everything is changing because they want Baker Mayfield to go back to that rookie year and improve on that. He gives us another year like last year. I think it's going to be an issue. Coming up, we'll give you our latest approval ratings for Pete Carroll, and Uncle Jimmy will tell us if he buys Carroll's story about Colin Kaepernick. Oh, I can tell where this is going next. Welcome back. Speak for yourself from the crib. Joined now by Uncle Jimmy. And Uncle Jimmy, Pete Carroll says he regrets not signing Colin Kaepernick back in 2017, that it just wasn't a good fit. You buy his story?
Hey, man, let me tell you something. This is a beautiful day in America. Huh? Take this under consideration. Take the pain. Take the trial. Take the tribulation. Take the pain that we've been going through as a nation. Huh? This is what I need you to do. Take the good times and the bad and look at what we're calling Kaepernick we had. Huh? It's a beautiful day in America. We done made it to the mountaintop. This is the day that we done heard an old white man apologize to a black man and say, I'm sorry, you should have got the job. I can say free at last. We free at last. Thank God. But Cap, we free at last.
Free to do what, Uncle Jimmy? Like, how is this the mountaintop? He still doesn't have a job. Pete Carroll's talking out of both sides of his mouth. That's called elastic language. Politicians are amazing at that. Head coaches, I guess, as well. What mountaintop? Like, Kaepernick is not going to join Eric Reed and all of them not going to join force with the Players Coalition. They called Malcolm Jenkins a sellout. How is this the mountaintop where at the top of the mountain, they're still beefing?
When have you ever heard an old white man apologize to a black man for not giving him a job? It's called baby steps.
Yeah.
It's not that you want too much. It's that you accept little.
Uncle Jimmy, I don't think I've ever had a real job, so I don't have much to draw on. But that's crazy if you think we've really progressed. I think right now the guilt is countrywide, worldwide right now, and people are cashing in on the guilt tax. But in terms of you making that actually your real economy, Kaepernick ain't eating off of this. Kaepernick got to do his own thing, Uncle Jimmy. Can't believe you got led astray like that. Bamboozled, hoodwinked. Food. And Pete Carroll, I'm sorry I had to drop you like that. Stay safe, America.